This morning we are going to pause from our study in the second epistle general of the Apostle Peter. We are pausing to take up a particular subject. I have for a number of months felt convicted to deliver just such a comprehensive message on this subject, as Lord willing, I will today. Now I say comprehensive because I have spoken in the past almost 2 years on this subject in emails to you and conversations with those who have been inclined to seek my opinions or what counsel I might offer. And certainly, I've spoken on this particular subject in messages on the Lord's Day, but never in a comprehensive manner, as I feel I should now do. And with respect to what I've already shared, certainly we've made use of the Scriptures. But I have held back from the sort of in-depth, comprehensive message on this subject until now, at least in part because of the difficulty in covering such a subject, first of all, in one message, and then because it being the Lord's Day, I just somewhat shy away from an issue that has so much of the temporal, though of course that's important. That's important. We do preach on things having to do with the temporal, but I mean temporal in the sense of even political, scientific, medical, and cultural. Certainly, we will be addressing the spiritual side of this. There is a spiritual side, of course there is. But this situation has become such a tangled mess. It's hard to know even how much you try to untangle in one message. But of course, conviction is conviction, duty is duty. And this week, I felt it was time to address what we're going to address in such a way as it will be addressed. And I hope to address it in a way that I'm not needlessly offensive to anyone. I try not to cause a needless offense. We ought not to do that. That's unscriptural. That's wrong. But it is a subject and it is an issue, a situation which profoundly affects the church and then also our entire nation. And such a message as this is not without precedence. As we will see, there'll be a couple of pastors I'll be referring to later, quoting from one from the Reformation, one a Puritan pastor from the beginning of our nation's time, actually from colonial times even. But very appropriate to our subject today is this from the book of Jeremiah, chapter 5. First this, the verse 30, a wonderful and horrible thing is committed in the land. The prophet speaks there of a thing which filled him with wonder, that is, astonishment, and which he called horrible. And so he was just filled with wonder at this thing or astonishment, and he said it's a horrible thing. You see, the princes, the priests, and the people, as you well know, in Jeremiah's time, just refused to accept that the chastening judgment of God had come upon them. They denied the obvious, even as it was happening. And they responded with contempt and even fury at the prophet for warning them and pointing to the obvious even and calling them to repent and return to the Lord. No, they rather listened to those who against the word of the Lord's prophets, and so against the Lord himself, and the obvious manifestation of the chastening judgment of God were assuring them that all will be well soon enough. There was a way out of their situation without repenting and turning back to the Lord, without searching their hearts and their ways, repenting and turning back to the Lord. These were those who healed, as the Lord said, they have healed. Not really, but healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. A horrible and wonderful thing is committed in the land. And the next verse, verse 31, the prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests bear rule by their means, and my people love to have it so. And what will ye do in the end thereof? The people love to have it so, because the false prophets were prophesying according to what they, the people, wanted to hear. And as for the priests, They had thrown aside the word of the Lord in obedience to it, as suited their purposes, and this also suited the purposes of a rebellious people. For many decades, increasing numbers of evangelicals have seen fit to compromise, and more so, on the word of the Lord. We all have to search ourselves and guard ourselves against that. None of us should be prideful or arrogant in this. All of us should realize that we're no different from any of these brethren who have compromised. If we stand, it's by the grace of God. But we have to, of course, be committed to standing by the grace of God. But we have to be vigilant against this. But the reality is, many have not been. And they have seen fit to compromise and more on the word of the Lord as suited their purposes. And they have gathered to themselves pastors who tell them what they want to hear, but avoid what they need to hear in many cases. And this spiritual recklessness and rebellion is contrary, of course, to the glory and honor of the Lord, to the good of his cause, to the good of his church, certainly to sanctification of his people, and to their peace and joy, and very important to our subject today, very relevant to it, wisdom, knowledge, and discernment. And the spiritual state of the man, this is very important. The spiritual state of the man will always manifest itself in that man or woman's day-to-day life with regard to temporal things as well, including how he thinks and reasons and speaks and acts. And so there's been a terrible reaping for all of that sowing, and more so. And in this present situation we talk about, this has been manifested, this spiritual way people have gone, what it's done to their way of thinking, what it's done to their hearts, what it's done to how they act, speak, think, the things they do, how they react to situations. We're seeing a terrible manifestation of that. And further, a momentous event, certainly a crisis of some sort, is when, and I've already alluded to this, it always becomes especially clear how much the spiritual compromise, even the spiritual corruption of the man, has affected not only his heart, but his mind, his way of thinking, his manner of reasoning, his level of discernment, and as the case may be, his depth of even empathy and compassion for others. In December of 2019, we heard reports of a virus called COVID-19, which was causing many in the city of Wuhan, China, it turns out, to become ill. Though that outbreak of sickness from the virus, which originated in a lab in Wuhan, had begun some time before we heard of it. Then we watched as COVID-19 relentlessly worked its destructive and too often deadly way through nation after nation to our shores, inflicting terrible suffering and, yes, much death, until finally in January, the first lab-confirmed case of COVID-19 was reported in America, this in the state of Washington. Now, our government was apparently caught entirely unprepared for such an epidemic in our land. And to be fair, this virus was in some ways a unique one, and there was much that couldn't be known about it without months of study and tests and observations. And certainly, even to this day, thousands of dedicated medical scientists and doctors specializing in infectious diseases continue to study this virus and continue to seek to gain ever more knowledge of this often mutating virus. However, you've heard the expression, a nation born in a day. It seems as if by the spring of 2020, many millions of brilliant, all but infallible infectious disease specialists had been born in a day, many of them Christians, politically conservative Christians. Obviously, I am a political conservative, maybe more conservative. I hope I'm a constitutionalist, but that's beside the point. I'll be referring to politically conservative Christians today. This is who is concerning me today and what's been going on. I only say politically conservative because that plays into what we're talking about. I do not say that they are, what would you call it, certainly not fundamentalists with regard to the doctrines and practice of our faith, but they are politically conservative. Now, over the past 22 months, I've often thought of that text in Jeremiah, wonderful and horrible thing is committed in the land. And I have thought of it in the context of how many evangelicals, how they have responded to a crisis in our nation. Even an obvious chastening judgment of God, which they then would rather insist, is simply a man-made crisis, or perhaps no crisis at all, against all evidence to the contrary. Many have spoken in the past, these same people, of the Lord's judgments on, oh, well, that nation over there in the past, or that other nation over there, or some particular group of people, which they believe, I suppose, had it coming, so to speak. But these same have rejected even the possibility that COVID-19 is a chastening judgment of the Lord on this nation. Instead, they've chosen to deny not only that, but have chosen to deny anything and everything that contradicts their view, their opinion, and really their desire of how things ought to be, rather than how they are with respect to COVID-19. It strikes me that many, not all, but many of these evangelicals, many of them, not all, but a number are middle-aged and younger. Perhaps too many, again, far from all, but too many of them grew up in a world where they had it too easy. They were given too much. And there was too much of a sureness and conformity in their world as to what things were and how that conformed to what they expected things to be. This is the way things should be. Therefore, they must be that way. And someone needs to make them that way for me. And so they constructed a fantasy for reality as to COVID-19 being nothing to be concerned about. And they set off on what could only be called, in some cases, because we have seen it, we have heard it, a grown-up temper tantrum against those who choose to deal with reality. I choose to deal with reality. Joined to that are any number of just plain rebellious and controversy-seeking individuals, many claiming the name of Christ as their Savior. And then there are the gullible. And we have compassion, concern for them. The more simple-minded who are carried along with a tide of misinformation, sensationalism, politicalization, and too often demonization. Certainly, I have been amazed at the failure of many Christians to seek the wisdom of the Lord first concerning a right Christian response to this situation. I have been amazed at the lack of empathy I've heard, the arrogance I've witnessed, the selfishness, the seeming loss of ability to rightly reason. God made us rational creatures, gave us the ability to reason, the willingness to pass on all manner of untruths and slander even as well, just as does the liberal left. I've seen the same way of acting. And there's a quickness too, not with all, but with many to mock and even rail against brethren who differ with them. Some of us have received that railing, been the object of it. And I include there, as far as railing against other brethren, sound and faithful pastors. I'm not on Facebook, but others are in this church, and I've read things, even sometimes written by Christians that I thought were different than to do these sort of things, and just railing against pastors who maybe posted something that went contrary to their, it's really a COVID ideology that they have, the reality they want, that they have constructed. And in that regard, what I have witnessed by some, not all again, but by some, is a form of cultural, ideological fascism worthy of the liberal left. You agree with us at every point, else we will demonize you. We will call you names. We will rail against you. We will mock you. We will seek to silence you. Now, I've witnessed this by people professing the name of Christ, not just a few. I've witnessed it in varying degrees among a great many evangelicals who have, in this also, with their public postings and so on and so forth, and some of their interaction with the world, they've made themselves a spectacle to the world. They put a blot on the very name of Christian and have become a great impediment to the gospel. What should a Christian do when faced with such a situation as we're talking about this morning? I will tell you what we ought to do. First, what we ought not to do. We ought not to say, what should a Republican do? Or what should a political conservative do? We ought to say, Lord, what wouldst thou have me to do? And we ought to go to the Scriptures. Search the Scriptures for the answer. And it is in the Scriptures. And we will go to them before we're done. We've been there before with regard to this to some extent. As I say, we're addressing it more comprehensively this morning. Now, let no one think that though I speak as I do this morning, first of all, I enjoy it, because I do not. And that's why I put it off so long. Secondly, that I've been in favor, because I need to address this. It takes time, but I suppose I had better, because I know how things turn out sometimes. I know I've got decades of, in the past, debates and radio and television and college campuses and this, that, and the other thing. And I know the techniques that some people use to try to undercut facts, to try to undercut an argument or a presentation that they cannot counter with facts and truth, because facts and truth are not on their side. And so I must mention that I have not been in favor of all the state and federal governments have done, of what they've done. You know that. How could I be in favor of, as in some places, governments telling all citizens, including perfectly healthy ones, to lock themselves up in their homes and stay there? I mean, even perfectly healthy ones. It's one thing to urge them to take precautions and so on and so forth, but to just lock them up. And then also dictating to families that they may not gather in their own private homes. No, I'm not in favor of that. I mean, families have to decide how to handle that and decide what would be responsible and how would they have such a gathering. But not the government reaching into the home like that. And how could I be in favor of, as was in at least one city, the city government using drones in order to spy on the public, in order to catch people breaking the stay-at-home order? How could we be in favor of police accosting a mother, threatening her with arrest because her child played with the next-door neighbor's child by consent of both mothers in their own yard? That happened. She may have been arrested, I don't remember. How could we be in favor of parents who disagree with a school board policy being investigated by the federal government as terrorists? We're not in favor of any of that. Now, though certain temporary health codes are proper sometimes in the face of a health emergency, I say with regard to public places, certain health codes are proper. They've been used in the past, temporary, I say, yet those measures ought always to be framed by common sense. They ought to allow for effective innovation and with the goal of facilitating citizens to go about their life and make a living, for instance, yet striving to reduce the risk of transmission of a dangerous and sometimes deadly disease. Responsible men and women will on their own take measures in such a situation to protect others and themselves. Irresponsible men and women do not. And that's been the problem. And that, I suppose, has tempted the government to do more of this. And as far as health officials, government health officials, they are simply doing what they believe is their job. When you're dedicated, you have this narrow vision. When you're dedicated to something like protecting, someone gives them the charge, protect the public health. That's what they attempt to do. And if they go too far, they need to be checked. But in their own mind, they have a laser beam on this. Now, it's another thing, politicians that take advantage of the situation. But we don't go into all that. But we would also add, how would we be in favor of governments forbidding church congregations to assemble together on the Lord's Day? Even if they diligently adhered to measures such as spacing out the people, ensuring good ventilation, very good ventilation, and as some did, the people even wearing masks at least coming and going, holding more services if necessary to keep the people spaced out well, people protected, the place being well ventilated. Why would that be wrong? No, they shouldn't forbid that, even in the peak of an epidemic. There's ways to take common sense approach to these things. And the scriptures tell us not to forsake assembling together, if at all possible, of course, if at all possible. Now, certainly I'll go on record as saying I oppose forced vaccinations by the government. It sets a very dangerous precedence, but I will state I believe it's entirely reasonable and proper for medical facilities to require healthcare workers to be vaccinated for highly infectious, dangerous diseases such as COVID-19. They work with sick people. And that's always been a policy of facilities like that. And I will say one more thing. There's been much talk about the military requiring it. It's the military's prerogative to do that. This is not civilian life when you're in the military. From what I know about the military, they do what they want to do. You join the military, you belong to them. Their concern is military readiness, and that's it. Now, where do we go from here? I'm glad I'm off of that because I don't want to spend much time on that. But of necessity, I mentioned it. There's so much to cover now that we've ventured on this subject. Well, we begin at the beginning, March 2020. We will deal primarily first with the temporal, practical side of this, and then we'll turn more to the spiritual side and let the Word of God speak to us concerning what course a Christian ought to take during a crisis such as COVID-19. And yes, it's been a crisis. You can deny it, but it's been a crisis. And we'll be speaking about that and showing that it is indeed a crisis. Now, those who disagree, those who mock the mention of COVID-19 as a crisis, I would urge them to simply listen to the voices of thousands upon thousands of ICU and critical care nurses and doctors all across this land, the very voices many conservative media sources have ignored, and some Christian media sources, and many Christians have either avoided or shut out, or in some cases written off with contempt, in some cases even mocking. Now, in March of 2020, the governor of our state, of course, ordered what amounted to a lockdown. It wasn't a total lockdown. It was a bit arbitrary, wasn't it? I mean, some businesses could be open, but they were deemed essential. Some were, and some weren't. Churches were not deemed essential. Now, for our part, because some in our church were of the mind we should do at least for a time, we should do so. I say at least for a time. We had a situation where I delivered my sermons into a computer and sent them. And it did seem prudent right at the start because we were trying to learn more about COVID-19 and we were seeking the Lord for wisdom. Now, soon enough, we realized that we could gather together outside, take all prudent precautions, and then inside, and diligently do the same. And we did. We did, and we still are being careful. But I say many are vaccinated, but when we're with other people that aren't, we're being careful. But we socially distanced. This was before vaccination. We did the ventilation. We had hand sanitizer and all that. And if anyone would have been more comfortable staying home and receiving the sermons by the internet, we would have been happy to do that. But we did take precautions, very good precautions with very good ventilation, spacing, and so forth, and that we did require. And we would have split our church for safety's sake and had two morning services if we would have had to. But our place, as you know, was large enough, a number small enough, that wasn't necessary. And we weren't in the public eye, were we? At that time where we met, we weren't in the public eye, and so it all worked out very well for us to keep assembling together, as we felt compelled and convicted to do. And we don't now look down on some other churches that weren't in the same good situation we were and felt they couldn't do that. Now, through the past 22 months from the start of this COVID situation, as you know, I have urged all of our congregation to make what as their rule? A very simple rule. What have I said over and over? Prudence and charity. Prudence and charity. And I've stressed the disease is a serious one. And I've spoken from the pulpit on this situation, being apparently a chastening judgment of God. I've addressed publicly issues that have come up while we're gathered together. Those few who have asked me for my advice or view, I've given it. But there is a medical side to this. And I have been careful from the start not to give medical advice. Others have been, not in this church perhaps presently, but others have been pretty free about offering people in various churches, of course, medical advice. And yes, I have received much instruction and even rebuke from newly minted medical experts on COVID-19. I speak of evangelicals who have joined a large number of secular conservatives led by a number of conservative media personalities in a campaign of misinformation, obfuscation, and radicalization. This apparently proud bunch fancies themselves to be patriots, quite the patriots, but I say they're far from it. Our nation is in crisis, and all I've heard is selfishness and self-centeredness and denial. It is fortunate for America that our nation's people were of a different character from these during World War II. It's fortunate that some half of the nation didn't say, well, my boy's not overseas fighting the enemy, so why should I do anything to help the war effort? Or even, well, this war is, it's much to do about nothing. I mean, there's no real danger from the armies of Tojo, Hitler, and Mussolini. It's fortunate that's not how Americans were. I have shared the story with you of how my dad, when he was flying his combat missions with the 8th Air Force in 43 and 44, till he was shot down in the 11th mission, but he spent his weekend leaves with an English family called the Williams family, and I will always be grateful to them. That was so nice of them. They lived in a suburb of London, Sidcup. And we have a letter Mrs. Williams wrote to my dad's buddy, who was a ball turret gunner, dad being the tail gunner, that also stayed there. And she spoke of various things. This was after Dad went missing, and his buddy too, of course, and the whole crew. But she spoke of various things. Then she talked about how their family was each doing the part. Some were in the service overseas. The grown-up daughters were working, one in an ambulance, another in the canteen for soldiers, and she was doing things. And she ended this way, but we know that in the end, we shall all be happier people for having played our part. We ought to want to be able to say that when, God willing, this particular crisis is over, that we all played our part to try to bring it to an end. Now, if you are one of that COVID reality denying crowd, it seems with so many, they never have to say they're wrong. There's a license that where you never have to say you're wrong. You can just keep repeating things that are provably false. And many evangelicals who are part of that crowd, for them, the thought of actually searching the scriptures to discern how they ought to speak and act in such a situation seems not to have entered their mind. But I tell you, these folks are a living warning to all of us of how quickly discernment and even the ability to simply reason rightly can be gone if we become proud, stubborn, and driven by a political ideology. It's a very dangerous thing, and it is habit-forming to first settle on what we want reality to be, what we think it ought to be, and then reject everything, no matter how obviously true, which conflicts with that desired reality, and at the same time lay hold on any number of claims or facts, so-called, even though easily proven false, that will support it. But that's what I've seen many do with this COVID situation, including many evangelicals and even that I personally know in various parts of the country and even the world. Rather than speak in generalities, though, I need to pass on to some specifics. This, too, is a part of this message that it's different, at the very least, to address these things on the Lord's Day from the pulpit. But as I say, it's not unprecedented, and I can't speak in just generalities. I do not intend to speak of the most radical claims by some evangelicals, such as the COVID vaccines implant the chip in the arm, or people that receive it will become, what is it, transhumans, or those who insist that the COVID epidemic is a government genocide. Yes, I've heard this, carried out by the medical community of this nation, that hospitals are being used as extermination camps. Yes, I've heard it, including from a pastor. But these claims are worthy of only utter contempt. So we pass on. I won't insult any of your intelligence with any of those claims. But we need to briefly take up at least some false information which has become passed around and so willingly believed and spread by many evangelicals. Obviously not all evangelicals who are politically conservative and so forth, but many who are, including a good number we know. A wonderful and horrible thing is committed in the land. The prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests bear rule by their means, and my people love to have it so, and what will ye do in the end thereof? Early on in this epidemic, give you your first example, and all who hear this. I heard a big-name conservative Wisconsin talk show host, a woman, otherwise a quite intelligent one, making much of what she supposedly discovered by accessing a list of the cause of death of COVID patients in a Milwaukee hospital. She was almost gleeful as she crowed that those patients were listed as dying of such things as heart failure, stroke, respiratory failure, to use, I suppose, somewhat layman's terms. So she concluded, no, the COVID deaths are being greatly inflated by the medical community. They're dying of other things. In her mad, blind intent to make COVID-19 to be nothing, she seemed utterly oblivious to the foolishness of not realizing that those reasons for death listed for the COVID patients were the results of the ravages of COVID-19. People die of what particular diseases cause. But many political conservatives, including not a few evangelicals, just passed on that supposed stunning revelation. And then we heard early on from the same crowd that COVID, against all evidence, including in other countries first and then our own, was nothing more than a flu or a bad cold. Some still claim it. And ridicule those who differ from them. Others have had at least enough concern for their own reputation to tiptoe away from that one. But in the past 22 months, close to 850,000 Americans have died. And if not for the COVID vaccination, and if not for the heroic dedication of thousands of doctors and nurses, and the fact that a good many Americans did take some common sense precautions to protect themselves and others, that number would be far higher today. Some cold, some flu. We heard Sweden. Sweden was all the rage for a while. Look at Sweden. They're not doing anything. They're not taking precautions, and look how low their rate of COVID is. That didn't last. At present, Sweden has some of the most restrictive COVID rules, if you want to call them, or laws, more so than the U.S. by far in a number of other countries. We heard of herd immunity. Herd immunity will take care of it. That was the rage early on. It still is with many people. We speak here of natural herd immunity. This will make an end of COVID-19. Just let the virus run its course. And these folks seem to think that already close to 850,000 dead Americans and counting is no big deal. But this herd immunity by infection with a disease such as COVID-19 is nothing less than the survival of the fittest strategy. And that is unbefitting a Christian or any person of honor, empathy, and decency. But practically speaking, herd immunity by infection and death will not work with COVID, because first persons can become reinfected with COVID. And we personally know some who already have been. And secondly, that strategy just simply ensures that COVID will be a permanent fixture. Before vaccinations were put into place, such viruses as polio, measles, and smallpox were permanent realities. I grew up knowing children stricken with polio, including a poor boy in my class who wore heavy leg braces and walked with crutches. I remember lining up with other children, taken there by grateful parents all across the nation to be vaccinated for polio. In my case, in Linda's, it was 1961 with the Sabin vaccines. It started earlier, but that's when we got it. And we were vaccinated for smallpox. But without vaccination, those viral diseases would still be with us. Herd immunity did not wipe them out. They went on and on and on, century after century. It did not wipe them out any more than eliminated measles. They were viral diseases. And I speak from experience with measles. I had a terrible case of measles. I'm glad, thankful the Lord brought me through without any permanent damage. But any farmer, such as I was for many years, will tell you the folly of thinking that natural herd immunity will eliminate a viral disease from a species of animal, including because, first, that's a good way to lose a good many animals. And secondly, if the animals can become reinfected again, then the herd immunity by infection strategy is folly and ruin. The same holds true with human beings. We also heard hospitals are being paid for each COVID death they report. So they're inflating the numbers, cooking the books, as I heard it put. That is patently false, and it's ungodly slander. We ought not to pass such things on. The truth can be had easy enough on that. We've heard doctors are killing patients because they put them on ventilators, another ungodly, baseless slander. With respect to a disease such as COVID-19, patients are put on ventilators when they need ventilators to breathe, rather than struggling for breath in such a way it does them more and more damage and they can't even fight the disease. And they're put on ventilators with the hope certainly they'll survive often when otherwise they wouldn't. But those sort of slanders abound. And not a few evangelicals are guilty of spreading them. It fits the ideology, the COVID ideology that is theirs. And in the process, they make thousands of dedicated, caring doctors into callous, irresponsible monsters. What does God think about slander? What does he think about false witness? What does he think about taking a broad brush and just painting a whole group of people in such a way? Are there doctors here and there that are not good doctors? Of course, you find that in any profession. You take personal responsibility with that in that regard. And you certainly can always get other opinions and so on and so forth. But to do this, to demonize a whole group of people in such a way is so wicked. Then we've also heard from some who profess Christ that they know someone. They know someone. Or perhaps know someone who knows someone who somehow is involved in the healthcare industry somehow. They may be a receptionist. They may be this. They may be that. They may have nothing to do with infectious diseases or the ICUs even. But that someone revealed to them unethical, systematic, ongoing malpractice by urgent care, critical care, and ICU physicians who are refusing to render proper treatment to COVID patients. No matter that this would require tens of thousands of doctors and nurses and hospital administration personnel to be acting in an unethical, immoral, callous, criminal way. No, I heard it from this person, or I heard it from this one who heard it from that one. It's got to be true. Scriptures have a lot to say about talebearing and slander. And then there is that relative handful of MD champions who, like the prophets of Jeremiah's day, tell a multitude of COVID contrarians just what they want to hear. I speak of the likes of the quack Joseph Mercola, but also some who may even have been quite accomplished in some respects, but who are provably wrong in their claims about COVID. They gravitate to the limelight, and if Christians would take the time to really investigate them, they find out that perhaps they're someone to steer clear of. I say if they differ with 860,917 medical doctors in this nation, because as of 2015, that's how many there were, including 8,515 infectious disease specialists. But no, as this COVID situation has worn on, every so often the cry is raised from the folks of which we speak, a champion, a champion. The most recent COVID contrarian champion to enter the list has been Dr. Robert Malone, a man with some invaluable, or I should say laudable accomplishments, and perhaps invaluable, and whom has made many appearances recently on conservative radio and television. But right out of the gate, there's a problem with the man. He claims to be, quote, his own words, the original inventor of mRNA, that technology. That's patently and provably false. First of all, hundreds of dedicated individuals were involved in the development of it overall. But if anyone deserves the principal credit, it is an Hungarian-born biochemist, Katalin Karikó, if I pronounce the name right. Certainly not Dr. Robert Malone, as he so brazenly and falsely claims. It's not even close. Way, way back, he made a couple contributions to the overall research with regard to one aspect. Others did the same, but there were two principal persons who doggedly stayed with it, and if anyone gets the credit as being the inventors, it would be them, not him. And he's made a number of dubious claims now, and we could speculate on why, and I don't want to, because anything I would say, yes, I've heard things, why? But I'm not going to speculate on it because I would want to hear it from his own mouth. And I haven't checked him out that much. But he speaks what a great multitude wants to hear, and so he continues to appear on conservative media outlets. They must know that that's a lie, what he's saying. But they keep putting him on. And many evangelicals are more than happy to make use of the wisdom, so-called, of this man, who is not above lying for his own self-aggrandizement. Apparently. And he's been on big name conservative networks and talk radio and so forth. It's just common sense and personal responsibility before God that we never place unquestioning blind trust in doctors. They are fallible men. But rather we pray and we gather information from a wide range of reliable reputable, knowledgeable sources, and we make our conclusions and decisions. If you're talking about a diagnosis, it's entirely appropriate to get a second opinion or a third opinion. If you're talking about a situation like we are, COVID-19, well, personally, I prefer to establish the facts about COVID-19 by listening, not to a Robert Malone here or someone over yonder. No, by listening to critical care and ICU nurses and doctors, infectious disease specialists and scientists. We're talking hundreds and hundreds and even hundreds of thousands. I prefer to go to, for instance, the Mayo Clinic Division of Infectious Disease, John Hopkins Hospital and Research University, Sinai Samaritan, Cleveland Clinic, Harvard Medical School, all of the above and more. And look at this wide range and see if there's a consensus, a wide consensus on these things. I prefer to see what the American Medical Association says, the American Nurses Association, the American Association of Medical Colleges, the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases, the Infectious Disease Society of America, and so forth. What a blessing we can do that. That's what I prefer to do. That's how I establish facts on something like this. I'm not a medical expert, and I don't want to listen to this man here and that one over yonder, especially when I research them and I find out they're not people I should listen to. a broad consensus. All of these, as I've looked at these, speaking as one concerning the COVID-19 virus, its nature, its effects, its treatments, its potential long-term consequences, measures we should take to fight it, including vaccination. But all are ignored by a great many Christians in favor, as I say, of a doctor here over yonder in this vast nation because he says what they want to hear with regard to the reality they want to have. We move on. It's not enjoyable to talk about these things, but we need to put things in perspective. We can't talk in generalities. I will not bring up everything, but I'm going to bring this up. Ivermectin. This has been all the rage. A vast majority, literally almost all, of medical doctors, including ICU doctors, infectious disease specialists, pharmacists, and other medical and healthcare professionals oppose using it. It's not just the FDA. Even Merck, the company that manufactures ivermectin, has published a statement saying it's not effective against COVID and should not be used that way. Oh, but some of these say, I knew someone, I know a case myself where I heard this. The husband got very sick with COVID-19, so the wife thought she felt it coming on. She took ivermectin and she didn't get sick. Well, that begs a couple of questions. One, did she have COVID-19? And two, the same people say the vast majority of it's very mild. Well, she maybe had a very mild case. That's hardly establishes the effectiveness, those sort of things, with ivermectin. Christians are getting prescriptions from doctors in other parts of the country who are willing to write out such a prescription without examining them or even knowing them. In some cases, they're even having health records. What kind of doctors are those? I wouldn't trust them. Christians have been using livestock ivermectin, which is not real smart. I was a farmer. I've used ivermectin. That's formulated for livestock. You have to understand that. I have read reports of ICU doctors, and not just one or two, who have said people are coming in sick and bewildered, very sick with COVID, because they're bewildered. They've been taking ivermectin. Why didn't it work, they say. We know at least one man who died because he refused to take any treatment for COVID except ivermectin. Others are they're poisoning themselves by taking too much, by taking livestock. It's just stunning. There's a U.S. senator running around championing this ivermectin for it, but it's not proven. There's been some studies that say early on maybe, and then others it's not proven. It doesn't work. It's not proven to work, I say. And so you've got this going on. Recently, members of the Committee to Protect Healthcare, these are doctors here in Wisconsin, they came out and called on that U.S. senator to stop it. They say it's dangerous, and people have been ingesting this ivermectin, and they're coming into hospitals with nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, and so on. But yet, that endures. It works. It works. It works. Ivermectin, if we just take that, and these doctors, these demonic doctors, refuse to let us do it. They have an obligation to do no harm. They took an oath, didn't they? Then you have this enduring claim that doctors are refusing to treat COVID early when they could cure it. Again, that's patently false. I have read scientific papers on it, not just one. It's not so simple. They have been trying to develop early cures, and what works in the lab does not always work on humans. They have had some hope with things, and then it has had bad effects on the person, or this or that, or it didn't work. There is this new pill, antiviral, and that has promise, but it's not going to put an end to COVID-19. We can't get into that. We have some to cover here yet before we then move on to the spiritual side of this. These vaccines, mRNA, they were rushed into use. That's the claim. Well, Yes, there was something called warp speed. All the procedures they usually use to develop a vaccine were used, all of the tests, but rather than use them consecutively, as they usually do, if one fails this test, then they might not go on, they use them concurrently so they could speed this up. But there are decades of research behind it. And in fact, a few years back, they began limited but very successful trials on cancer patients with this technology. Very successful, very encouraging. Seems to be a blessing from the Lord to me. And in the trials, 44,000 people. This has not been rushed. There was a need, so they had to seek to expedite it. But it's been well tested. And then, of course, you've all heard it alters DNA. That's totally contrary to how it works. And then that the vaccines are self-vaccinating others. Have you heard that one? Oh, I read. I went to a link included in an article by a Christian. A Christian sent on this article, a Christian I know. And supposedly in that article, they have a link to Johns Hopkins, who admitted that these vaccines are self-vaccinating others. I actually went to the link. I actually read. That's a favorite tactic. Take a big name medical organization, a hospital, a university, and say, look, they admitted this or that. Well, they either are taking things out of context from them or they didn't say anything of the sort. I went there. It was a total fabrication what they said. It was a paper. I don't want to spend too much time on this. It was a paper, a scientific paper, where they examined different possibilities for mass vaccination as fast as possible in an emergency. You know, that's not a bad thing to look into, given the possibility of biological warfare against us. And they had a number of things. And one of them was self-vaccinating vaccines. Now, first of all, that can only be done with a virus. Not this mRNA. That doesn't work with that. Second of all, they didn't admit they're using it. The only using of it was in some parts of the world, they tried it with animals where there were rabies problems, and it worked pretty good. But thirdly, they are not using it on people. Fourthly, they came to the conclusion that even in a national, I mean, something far greater than COVID-19, there'd be two problems which would preclude them using that. One, that it could be dangerous to some people that have certain medical conditions where it might be dangerous to them if they were vaccinated with that vaccine, since it is a virus vaccine. It makes use of a virus. And two, it would be unethical because there would be no permission given. And so they rejected it. Not according to the paper I read. That was proof. It's happening right now. And then also vaccines spread COVID. You've heard that. That's so ridiculous. I won't even take it up. And then there's the VARS situation. Many people don't know what VARS stands for. They just pass on the story about VARS, admitting that thousands have died and been crippled by the COVID vaccines. VARS, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. Let me read from their website. VARS is a passive reporting system, meaning it relies on individuals to send in reports of their experiences to the CDC and FDA. VARS is not designed to determine if a vaccine caused a health problem. When evaluating data from VARS, it's important to note that for any reported event, no cause and effect relationship has been established. It's just set up. Anybody can send something in there. I was vaccinated, and then 2 weeks later, this happened. 3 weeks later, that happened. Or my father was vaccinated, and 2, 3, 4 weeks later, he died. It could be from anything, but they thought maybe the vaccine, so they sent it in. When evaluating data from VARS, it's important to note that for any report event, no cause and effect relationship has been established. Reports of all possible associations between vaccines and adverse events, possible side effects, are filed in VARS. They just, anything people think could be. Therefore, VARS collects data, and it goes on whether it's coincidental or could be caused by the vaccine. They don't care. They want everything. The report of an adverse event to VARS is not documentation the vaccine caused the event. One of the main limitations of VARS data is that it cannot determine if the vaccine caused the reported adverse event. This limitation has caused confusion in the publicly available data from VARS. And so people can do what they want. They can pump the thing up. I went to where you report. It's easy to report anything you want. And by the way, as of the beginning of last June, with regard to the vaccine, this is last June. That's the last information I have. 96% of America's 860,917 doctors were vaccinated. And that figure is now near to 100%. And the vast majority of the nation's 4.2 million nurses are vaccinated. I know that's edging, well, last summer already toward 90, and so it's higher. But the vaccine has been really raked through the coals. Have you heard the one about pilots getting vaccinated and dying from lung ailments when they fly then? Does something to their lungs, we're told, the pressurized cabin, I guess, and then they die because they were vaccinated. Apparently they have different lungs, pilots do, than co-pilots, passengers, and stewardesses who have been vaccinated. People have got to think. Some things are so patently, obviously, a fairy tale on their face, they should reject them. And we hear masks and social distancing don't do any good, as studies show, certain studies, and since COVID's still with us. Well, social distancing and masks could never get rid of COVID. It was just it's more of a temporary thing as they were waiting for vaccinations. Just this week, of course, there was some crowing that the CDC said that admitted cloth masks don't work. No, they didn't do any such thing. They said they don't work as good with Omicron. They said they don't work all that well and that they are better than nothing, though, and that they protect the others more than the wearer. It's common sense when you think of how this is spread by, you might say, your breath and droplets, that would help some. And obviously, surgical masks more so, they said, and N95 masks more so. Be against the mask mandates if you want. If you think that's what you should do, lobby against it. But don't twist the facts. There's too much twisting of facts. I say if you want to be against it, if you don't think that in the peak of a pandemic that people should have to wear a mask in stores and so on and so forth or tight quarters, well, go ahead. It's America. You know, make your voice heard if you like, but let's not twist the facts. I like this one. The vaccine is ineffective because COVID's still with us. Half the country isn't vaccinated. That could have something to do with it. But let me just share some statistics from our own Monroe Hospital and Clinic. January 10th, 29% of the hospital patients are there because of COVID. 100% of the COVID patients are unvaccinated. 100% of the ICU COVID patients are unvaccinated. And we could give other examples, but of course the vaccination works. It's silly to say it doesn't, silly at best. And if two people are both vaccinated, the odds of one of them giving it to the other is very, very, very tiny indeed. Now, I have mentioned conservative radio talk show hosts. Why am I harping on that? Because they're a major factor in passing on all sorts of misinformation. Now, I'm thinking of four on the channel I listen to when in the car at lunch. I try to listen to a broad range and read a broad range of media and try to use discernment, of course, to sort things out. But yes, I listen to conservative radio at lunch or if I'm in the car. And there are four that I often hear overall, depending on when I'm in the car. But certainly at lunch, I hear the two co-hosts who replace Rush Limbaugh, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. And I also hear another man in the morning when I'm in town for something, or that woman I mentioned earlier in the afternoon when I'm out and about in a car. Now, what have we heard from these people? What have we heard? The story is both what we've heard and what we've not heard. These that I've listened to and others that I've checked have handled the COVID crisis in a manner worthy of the left. They've taken facts out of context. They've passed on all manner of misinformation. They've trumpeted poorly done studies that suit their purposes and misrepresented or ignored solid research that was replicated. That's important, these kind of studies, and in some cases peer-reviewed even. Those they ignore because they're contrary to their purposes. They've cravenly covered up. They've been silent when it comes to anything contrary to their narrative. In a shocking display of unconcern and lack of empathy, they have virtually ignored the realities, as many Christians have chosen to do, of ICUs full and hospitals congested during multiple surges. Important procedures postponed, even emergency situations where individuals have had to be flown to another hospital when there was no room for them in a hospital filled with COVID patients, and ICUs overflowing with COVID patients, and now for some time, unvaccinated COVID patients. I read of a baby who had to be flown 500 miles because they couldn't do anything for it in a hospital, so choked with COVID patients, unvaccinated COVID patients. These have just, these hosts have ignored these things. At the same time, they've even laughed off and mocked the reality of the situation. And in that, all the suffering and death that's going on, they ignore reality like it'll go away. And that seems to be the attitude. But it is the attitude of selfish, immature, self-centered people. Let me give you an example. This summer, during another surge of COVID is when this happened. Things were terrible in a number of states, especially where vaccination rates, of course, were low. Very terrible there. In fact, that's where it was terrible, where vaccination rates were the lowest. That's where it was the most terrible. And we read and we heard testimonies of ICU doctors and nurses and hospital administration personnel telling of the terrible situation, terrible stories of widespread suffering and death, and including the suffering and death of otherwise healthy people included, and even young people. And what did we hear, for instance, from those Limbaugh replacements and other conservative talk show hosts? We didn't hear about it. Not the ones I heard, listened, and others I checked. I heard the usual mocking of those sounding the alarm on COVID and those seeking to simply do what's reasonable, right, compassionate, responsible, and I would say righteous. And I heard this at that very, very time from, it was either Clay Travis or Buck Sexton. They told us if we do not take precautions, hospitals would be overrun. To this day, not a single hospital has been overrun. I heard that with my own ears at a time where hospitals all over the country were overrun. That was a flat-out shocking lie. The other day, I heard they played a little bit from the White House spokesman, Jen Psaki. I'm no fan of hers. She's adept at mistruths, I know. But in this case, she told the truth on COVID. They got done. One of those two hosts said, everything she said is a lie. And it wasn't. Have you ever heard them take calls from ICU nurses or doctors who would contest what they're saying? Have you ever heard them interview those sort of ICU nurses, doctors, specialists in infectious diseases who would say anything contrary? I mean, this is a vast majority of the position say something contrary to their COVID ideology. No, they interviewed Dr. Robert Malone. I heard from one of them just this past week. They were railing on, well, I suppose individuals like us. These people have no end game. What's their end game? Viruses don't just go away. These kind of viruses, they don't just go away. They keep coming back around like smallpox did and others. You can't just wish them away. I heard them speak of the massive failure of the COVID vaccine. What? It's been very successful, as we've seen from the stats I gave you. And you see, if everyone got vaccinated, that would be the answer. They talked about the new antiviral pill. You can just take the pill then, and that'll take care of it. That's not going to take care of it. We won't go into that. We heard other such things. These conservative voices are like, unfortunately, so many who listen to them. They just ignore so many things, including long-term COVID and even lifelong bad effects, damaging effects for some who have had COVID, even some of the milder cases, they're afraid there'll be lifelong effects. That is a reckless indifference to reality. And a reckless indifference to reality does not change reality. And many are going to find that out in the future to their great sorrow, just as many have already found that out. And some have forfeited their life to their willful self-deception. But we ignore it. It's being ignored. Pleas from persons on their deathbed or their relatives on the reality of what's going on and pleading with others, I didn't get vaccinated, please get vaccinated. They're ignored. What was the latest this week? Well, here's what we heard from some of the conservative talk media people. In fact, Clay Travis, they have a huge audience. It's Rush Limbaugh's audience. Clay Travis, I heard him say this on the radio with a triumphant note in his voice. The CDC has finally admitted that 75% of COVID deaths are of persons with comorbidities. First of all, you should see what the CDC calls comorbidities. There's a lot of them. But secondly, that's not what the CDC said. And then here's his tweet on Twitter. The CDC director just said over 75% of COVID deaths occurred in people with at least 4 comorbidities. Since Biden can't shut down COVID, suddenly all this data is getting shared publicly. Clay Travis and his Twitter thing. Did you hear what I said there? Did you hear what he said? And then that was picked up by people like Candace Owens. She tweeted, this is a stunning admission and one that is quite literally at the crux of my Facebook lawsuit against their fact checkers. Conservative commentator Candace Owens tweeted, I reported on the scam of them calculating deaths with COVID years ago and fact checkers called me a liar. So this is all out now. The CDC admitted it. We've got them. The CDC director said 75% of COVID deaths are people with comorbidities. Is that what she said? No, she didn't. That was taken out of context. Let me just read the transcript of this Good Morning America interview. Good Morning America host, I want to ask you about the encouraging headlines that we're talking about this morning. A new study talking about just how well vaccines are working to prevent severe illness. Given that, is it time for us to start rethinking how we're living with this virus? If it is potentially here to stay, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky. A really important study, if I may summarize it. A study of 1.2 million people who are vaccinated between December and October and demonstrated that severe disease occurred in 0.015% of the people who received their primary series and death in 0.003% of these people. The overwhelming number of deaths, over 75%, occurred in people who had at least 4 comorbidities. So really, these are people who were unwell to begin with. Did you get that? It's not 75% of all COVID deaths, where people have 4 comorbidities. She was speaking of COVID deaths of people who are vaccinated, which is a very small number compared to COVID deaths. It's just the vaccinated. She was pointing out it's a very effective vaccination, and most of the people who die, they have 4 comorbidities. But no, they didn't say all COVID deaths. All COVID deaths is what they were talking about, just COVID deaths by vaccinated people. Do you see the huge difference there? It was just patent misinformation. It was a lie. It was actually showing how effective the vaccine is. The vast majority of people dying are not vaccinated. It didn't even apply to them. 22 months, almost 850,000 dead Americans and counting. Those who want to know the truth of what's happening are willing to listen to those who are on the front lines. You want to know what's happening in a war? Go to the frontline soldiers and the commanders. That's how you'll find out, not the armchair generals. Go to the ICU doctors and nurses, including some of them who are our brothers and sisters in Christ, and other hospital staff as well that deal directly with the disease. Go to the infectious disease specialists. You will hear thousands upon thousands of highly credible men and women speaking with one voice. We just have seen such terrible things, and they're being ignored. We've heard of people literally dying in hallways waiting to be able to get into an ICU bed. We've heard of shortages of oxygen because of COVID. We've seen interviews with exhausted, crying ICU nurses telling what's really happening and pleading with people to help by getting vaccinated. We've seen refrigerated semi-trailers set up in some cases for temporary morgues. We've heard time and again of hospitals, and not a few, where people with very serious conditions, this has happened many times, needing surgery that has an ICU stay following it, and they've had to wait until a surge caused by unvaccinated people. For some time now, it's been surges because of that, is passed. My own sister. She could have died waiting to get into a hospital because she was having open heart surgery and would need an ICU bed. There were no ICU beds there within a long distance because they were filled with unvaccinated, primarily unvaccinated COVID patients. These are the cold, hard facts. No matter how one may feel about COVID vaccines, why deny the cold, hard facts that make it clear that the surges we've seen since the vaccines were available are the surges of the unvaccinated? And there's other things we could bring up. With all the warnings of long COVID and lifelong consequences, and it's just ignored. It's just ignored. Our nation's healthcare system has come to the breaking point a number of times. Does that not matter? Healthcare costs have been and will be driven up. Health insurance will cost more. Our nation's national debt has been pushed up. Inflation is in part because of this epidemic. We've lost ICU nurses and doctors, not because of vaccination mandates, but who have themselves come to the breaking point finally after 22 months of this, and they've just burnt out. They've been demonized even. And they're just burnt out. They're so discouraged because now there's a vaccination and it's still going on. They're burnt out after 12 and 16-hour shifts, working week after week after week in an atmosphere of sorrow and suffering and dying and death. And they've gone through this over and over with surges. They're frustrated because they know many, many needless deaths are taking place. Listen to them. That's what we should do, but instead they're lied about, they're demonized even by many on the right, just as the police are by those on the left. I'm seeing such parallels here. I want to just read just one statement by a nurse. I've read so many statements like this from a critical care nurse from the Gunderson Healthcare System of Hospitals and Clinics, which is in the western part of our state and into Iowa, I believe. And it's a number of clinics, as it says, and hospitals and so forth. And this was posted on a hospital, on the hospital website where she works, which is La Crosse. Well, let's just hear what she wrote here. Critical care nurses and staff are exhausted. Now, this was just written, by the way, this past week and posted. What if the next person who needs us is your mother, your child, you? We are almost 2 years into a deadly global pandemic. Patients battling COVID-19 fill Gunderson's critical care unit in La Crosse, where I work as a nurse for 12-hour shifts. Most of them are unvaccinated and can't breathe without machines. Every shift, we hook them up to ventilators, put in lines, and start emergency dialysis. Some survive, others don't. And she speaks about how the virus is now, whereas it wasn't doing this because of some mutations it's gone through and that, it's killing younger, healthier people, she says. Not only, of course, but she wants us to know that it's not that uncommon now anymore. These people are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. They are young parents who won't see their kids graduate or marry. They won't be able to spend one last holiday with their parents. They didn't get the chance to hug their spouse or say, I love you one last time. It's rare when we have vaccinated COVID patients in our unit. Let me repeat that. It's rare when we have vaccinated COVID patients in our unit. Being unvaccinated isn't a badge of honor. It's dangerous. We can help supply your body with oxygen when it can't on its own so that your heart and lungs can rest to fight COVID-19. We're tired of watching people die. It's the reason some are leaving healthcare. Unvaccinated, infected patients slowly suffocate and beg for us to save them. It's painful to watch. We're lucky there's a vaccine. Get it, please. We are exhausted. Please help us end this. And so she is begging people to get vaccinated. She's pointing out that it's rare when they have a vaccinated COVID patient in their unit. They are getting younger people as well. And she's begging people to get vaccinated so they don't end up there. And of course, there's the issue also that if you're not vaccinated, there's so much far greater chance not only of you getting the virus, COVID-19, but giving others the virus. All of this, and still a great many Americans, including Christians, have chosen to just look the other way, listen to lies, listen to misinformation, listen to half-truths, listen to distorted truths. And a great many, including Christians, have chosen to pass on all manner of destructive, provably false information on social media and by mouth, in some cases that not only denies reality, but defies rational thinking and right reason. When Christians do this, this callous disregard for truth and personal responsibility, there are effects for this. We are accountable for our words. Deuteronomy 32, the verse 4, He is the rock. His work is perfect. For all His ways are judgment, a God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is He. Our God is a God of truth, all kinds of truth. We are to be a people of truth. The scriptures say, Thou shalt not raise a false report. Put not thine hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. Exodus 23, the verse 1. Exodus 20, the verse 16. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. We could go on and on. Proverbs 10, the verse 18. He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. I am 70 years old and over than that. But I have never in my life seen such selfishness, foolishness, and irresponsibility, as well as a shocking cold-heartedness and lack of empathy for others, which has been manifested by such a great number of Americans, including no small number of Christians. It is deeply troubling. Further, a great many Americans, including a great many Christians, have also mocked, ridiculed, in some cases demonized those, even brethren. When Christians are the ones doing it, even brethren who, to put it simply and directly, just choose to take the course of wisdom and prudence and charity and empathy and sympathy and compassion. Christians that do that are called by some of their brethren cowards, emotionally deficient, goofballs, crazy, statists. They are objects of scorn and derision. They are told you have blood on your hands because the vaccines are killing people. They're told that they're living in fear, that they're not trusting God, that they're Fauciites. And I'm not a fan of that man for some reasons, but not for all the reasons others are, but or some others. But, I mean, there are Christians guilty of this very thing. And brethren railing on brethren and mocking and slandering and turning on faithful, sound pastors who disagree with them. I have read things posted on Facebook. Pastors I know that have simply posted things that were contrary to what the reality or what these folks, their reality that they want things to be, their COVID ideology. They have just savaged faithful pastors. And as for the charge that those who make use of certain simple, reasonable, common sense measures and means for the good of others and of themselves and even of their nation during a healthcare epidemic, Christians need to remember that God very often works by instrumental means. In this case, instrumental means He's provided for His people to protect themselves and others and do their part in the midst of a dangerous epidemic. We do not trust in these instrumental means. We trust in God who makes them effectual, and we give Him honor and glory and thanksgiving for His concern for us and His kindness to us. I just want to, before we go on, give you a few verses with regard to what we have seen as a very troubling mocking, railing of Christians against Christians, as we've been speaking of here, because of this COVID situation, this hurling accusations, this name-calling. It's a very sad thing indeed. It ought not to be. Proverbs 6, verse 16 through 19. These six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, an heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren. And then just 1 Peter 3, 8 through 12 as well. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. James has much to say about the tongue as well, and it would be good to read that. But we do not have the time with all we're covering. But it's been a very troubling thing for me. There have literally been church splits over all of this. It should not have been. As the apostle says, my brethren, these things ought not so to be. Now, time and time again, I have just read appalling comments on the end of news stories, reports, including interviews with ICU personnel, reports of great suffering and death in overflowing ICU wards. And I've seen things like, quit fear-mongering. They tell the people that are right there reporting on all this death and suffering, quit fear-mongering. And in one case where they were reporting on all the death and suffering, this very sunny comment, getting closer to herd immunity. In other words, people are dying off. Perhaps, you know, the death of the weak will soon be done or something. I don't know what they're thinking. It's not just the weak that are dying. And we've seen laughing post face things posted and so on. Certainly a wonderful and horrible thing is committed in the land. Christians have been guilty of being callous toward the suffering of others, of willful blindness, of foolishness, of selfishness, even of irrationality, of mocking, railing, and even viciousness. This is the sad reality. And I've read of doctors, I've read their comments, their literal comments. They've had to deal with Christians who come in, and they make scenes, and they say all sorts of wild things, and they pass on to these doctors all sorts of the kind of things we've been talking about, and they stand their ground on these things, and they've had to deal with them. Some of them, they haven't been able to help because they won't let them help. How does that look to these people? I've seen comments at the end of news articles about right-wing Christians. Well, of course the left hates right-wing Christians, as they say it, but in this case, the comments were because the right-wing Christians were acting like what we've been talking about. I think of Romans 2, verse 24, there's some application, I would think, the principle here. For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written, and so it is. Is that the way we're supposed to be, the way we've been describing? Philippians 2, 14 through 16. Do all things without murmurings and disputings, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain. Now, we have to deal with something here. I brought up the issue of COVID vaccination. I would have rather avoided speaking of such a topic on the Lord's Day, certainly, and as a pastor, and not as a just as a person, but as a pastor. But we need to speak on this now because I brought it up. I have heard and I have read comments from a good many Christians who make all sorts of baseless claims about the vaccinations or the vaccines, and I mentioned those claims earlier, some of them. They give those claims as reasons for why they've not been vaccinated. You know, it'll change my DNA. Or, look, it's killed already thousands and thousands. It's proven itself to be one of the safest vaccines ever, of course. But the most common reason I've heard from Christians that I know goes like this, something like this. I'm young and healthy, so why should I get vaccinated? There's no reason for me to be vaccinated. Well, as for the young part, I mean, I've heard people in their 50s on down make that statement. But the obvious answer is, why should you be vaccinated? Maybe you should look at the ravages COVID has made in our land. Maybe you should listen to the medical personnel on the front lines of this fight. Maybe you should think of others if you won't think of yourself. And as for yourself, there are plenty of people 50 and below who have been struck down with COVID. Some have died. Some are going to have long-range damage to their body. I mean, think of what you're saying. And then think of the consequences of many, many others saying this and doing the same thing. Often we hear, well, you know, you might say, well, what good does my one vote make in an election? And, oh, people say, if everyone thought like you, what would happen? Well, it's the same thing here. What's the difference if one person gets vaccinated? The trouble is, there's a whole bunch of one persons. And look what's happening. Now, we're going to address this from the scriptures very shortly. This I am young and healthy, so there's no need for me to be vaccinated, and other things that we've talked about. There are also those who are genuinely fearful of being vaccinated. They just can't get over it. I mean, not because of a far-out conspiracy theory that should be rejected, but they are afraid of possible side effects of the vaccine. And there are possibilities of side effects. They're pretty rare. But I mean, I never point to a particular person and say, you get vaccinated. Speaking in general terms here, you have to make your own decision. But the side effects are very, very rare. Any medicine you take, there's possible side effects. Any vaccine you get, and this has been a very safe one. But these kind of reasons, such a reason like that, it has to be understood when it's not rooted and grounded in selfishness, but just a fear that's lingering there in spite of all evidence that the vaccine is safe. Now, in all these months, I've only personally known one Christian, he doesn't live in America even, who has raised a concern about the abortion issue with regard to the COVID-19 vaccine. And I understand that concern. I speak of Linda and I, we researched that issue. We prayed about it. We weighed out also in light of what we found about the issue, which I'll address in a minute. But we weighed out also the consequences to others, not just ourselves, but others, including elderly relatives and so forth, and just others in general not being vaccinated. And we even postponed getting the vaccination for 1 month after we were eligible, just to be sure. And we were determined to wait for either the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccination, because I understand that, or rightly or wrongly, maybe someone can correct me, but a couple of the others, they have a much fairly close connection to at least a cell line. Are they made from it or made from some of the, I don't know. So I don't want to go there. All I know is the Pfizer and Moderna, I know what I know about them. They don't contain any fetal cells at all, or any human cells at all. But among the tests they were put through, there was one test which was done on cells, not fetal cells directly, but cells from the HEK293 cell line, which if you trace that back thousands of generations, they're found to originate in Holland in the early 1970s. Now, I did my research. Abortion was against the law at that time in Holland. It was against the law. Now, some say the original fetal tissue was from a miscarriage. I don't know if that's true. I've heard it. The U.S. National Library of Medicine and other sources simply say the HEK293 cell line dates back to a therapeutic abortion, but that's all we know. This cell line, others, of course, have been used in the development of other drugs and vaccines, which virtually almost everybody has used one of those drugs or vaccines probably. Now, I wish the mRNA, such as Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, had no possible connection to abortion at all, not even a real remote one like this one. It's not a direct one. It's very remote. But the situation is the vaccine, though not made out of aborted baby tissue, was tested once, not on aborted baby tissue, but on cells taken from a cell line that has been developed. There's many thousands of generations now removed from either what it was, a therapeutic abortion or miscarriage. So that remote connection to a likely abortion some 50 years ago has to be placed on the scale but the responsibility we have, on the other hand, to do what we can to avoid causing the death of others by giving them COVID-19. Again, it's not made, a baby wasn't aborted for this vaccine. It's not made from aborted baby tissues. It's not made even from cells from the cell line that date thousands of generations back to an aborted baby. But yet, I wouldn't look down on anyone who doesn't get vaccinated out of a true conviction due to that remote connection to a possible abortion. We had to weigh that out. We had to pray about it. Although I would tell those who seize on that remote abortion connection as an excuse, not a true conviction, but an excuse to not be vaccinated, they should check all medicines they use or have used and vaccines they'll use in the future to make sure there's not a similar remote connection to abortion or even something far more than that in the development or making of that particular medicine, drug, or vaccination. They ought not to be hypocrites. But I would tell everyone, certainly every Christian, they should carefully consider the consequences of not being vaccinated. We're seeing it. Well, certainly how it affects others, as well as the effect of so many unvaccinated people causing this epidemic to continue with all the sorrow, destruction, suffering, and death it's causing. Now, some will say, again, what difference does one person getting vaccinated make? I expect to hear that in these selfish times. That's the same old excuse that denies personal responsibility and the reality that when enough people use that excuse, the results are what we're seeing now. I would say to those whose reason for not doing so, getting vaccinated, I say, is simply self-interest rather than considering others they may infect and the harm this ongoing epidemic is doing even to our beloved country, that they need to rethink the issue. At this time, the only way to stop a virus such as COVID-19 is to have a mass vaccination campaign. That's the only way you stop reoccurring epidemics, smallpox and others. The smallpox epidemics would come, they would kill many, they would scar others, they'd wound others, and then they pass on. They always returned and did the same thing. Vaccination stopped that. Now, you may not know, or you may know, that when vaccination began against smallpox in the early days, many Americans came out against that. The Puritan pastor Cotton Mather felt that he needed to address the people on it and urge them to be vaccinated, even though that early vaccination was nowhere near as safe as these COVID-19 vaccinations. But far more lives were saved by it than were saved without using it. Obviously, many, many died that wouldn't have had to if no one would have used it. And so he spoke out as a pastor. The question of vaccination, as with all issues concerning COVID-19, requires us to search the scriptures to discern what the Lord would have us to do. Now, this is not to say we ought not to then also use the reason and rational powers God has given us to diligently search reliable, reputable, in this case, medical and scientific sources, and not a few, to gather sound knowledge as a basis for practical decisions, which are consistent then with what we discern as the will of God as to our actions in a given situation. In this case, an epidemic of a highly transmissible, damaging, and for all too many, deadly disease. It is truly a wonderful and horrible thing that with the COVID-19 epidemic, far too many evangelicals from the start have obviously, by their words and actions, never hardly given a thought to studying the scriptures as to what their duty is. Now, I would just briefly set before you some scriptural truth. First of all, given that COVID-19 is, as obvious, a highly infectious, damaging to the body disease and to some a deadly disease, we ought to consider what the sixth commandment of the moral law, thou shalt not kill, comprehends and requires. Certainly the commandment forbids all unlawful taking of human life, not just premeditated murder. Certainly it includes suicide. And of course, as is plain from the scriptures, thou shalt not kill stands at the head of all duties and sins of the same kind. We could devote a sermon here to the commandment and each commandment in that regard. But in the context of the current COVID-19 epidemic, we would just stress that chief among our duties under the sixth commandment is to have a concern for the health and welfare of others and to take great care not to be the cause of physical harm and certainly not death to others. We are also commanded by that, it comprehends this, by the commandment to make all to make use of all lawful endeavors to preserve our own lives as well. Since God is our maker, we're not our own. And as for us Christians, we're bought with a price, soul and body, bought with the price of the precious blood of Jesus. Now, with respect to God's will for our obedience concerning our duty to our neighbors, the moral law is briefly comprehended by this command, love thy neighbor as thyself. Does that not apply here? Romans 10, 9 through 10, for this thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. First, we are to take care not to cause our neighbor spiritual or moral harm. With all that comprehends as to our duty in word and deed and example. But just as certainly love worketh no ill to his neighbor, also must include taking care not to harm our neighbor in any way, including even his health. And Philippians 2, says, verse 4 says, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Early on in this epidemic, a Martin Luther quote, taken out of context, was circulated by email and social media. The claim was essentially that during the plague, bubonic plague, Martin Luther urged Christians to just trust God and you know, not make means or take precautions to avoid becoming ill with the plague. But I took the time to actually read the full manuscript of the document from which that Martin Luther quote was lifted out of context. It is a long letter to the Reverend Dr. Johann Hess, pastor of Breslau, in response to questions from that pastor to Martin Luther with regard to what should a Christian do in the plague? Should he flee? Should he stay and help people? What should he do? It was titled, Whether One May Flee from a Deadly Plague. And to sum up, Martin Luther, with regard to that answer, should one flee, to sum up, he said if God calls one to stay and to help others, there weren't the big hospitals and all the things we have now, so people had to help people more, that they, if they have the faith to stay, they should definitely stay and help, trust God and help. If they just don't have that faith, then it is lawful that they would leave because they wouldn't be doing what they were doing in faith. But I want to read some things from this because he includes much counsel with regard to how to act in even a situation like COVID-19. It's remarkable how this would apply. Let me just read some excerpts, not to tax your patience. He talks of those who don't trust God, who are called to help others, but they won't. But then he says, others sin on the right hand, on the other hand then. They are much too rash and reckless, tempting God and disregarding everything which might counteract death and the plague. They disdain the use of medicine. They do not avoid places and persons infected by the plague, but lightheartedly make sport of it and wish to prove how independent they are. Sounds familiar. This is not trusting God, but tempting him. God has created medicines and provided us with intelligence to guard and take good care of the body so that we can live in good health. And he speaks of how people that are reckless like that commit suicide. It's a form of suicide. And if he says if people wouldn't eat and drink, but just eat food and drink what they should and clothe themselves and so on, that would be a form of suicide. If they just said, oh, I'll just trust God to take care of that, and they didn't lift a finger or apply themselves to the means he provides. He says it's even more shameful for a person to pay no heed to his own body and to fail to protect it against the plague the best he is able, and then to infect and poison others who might have remained alive if he had taken care of his body as he should have. He is thus responsible before God for his neighbor's death and is a murderer many times over. and dropping down. No, my dear friends, that is no good. Use medicine. Take portions that can help you. Fumigate house, yard, and street. Shun persons and places wherever your neighbor does not need your presence or has recovered. And act like a man who wants to put out the burning city. What else is the epidemic but a fire which, instead of consuming wood and straw, devours life and body? You ought to think this way. And he says this about those, once they've recovered, if they've had it, act toward others that no one becomes unnecessarily endangered on his account and so cause another's death. And then he goes down here. If everyone, just one more excerpt, if everyone would help ward off contagion as best he can, then the death toll would indeed be moderate. And that was without vaccinations. He said, do what you can to protect others. Sound pretty relevant, doesn't it, to today? And also is the document from which something was lifted and misused. Just let me share a few more scriptures and close. There have just been far too many evangelicals who have, as we think of what Martin Luther said, have made a show even of acting carelessly and contemptuously of the means the Lord has graciously given us to obey him in such a situation with respect to our duties to him and our neighbor, even as we trust in him and simply do the things that are reasonable and responsible while not going to true extremes. Those who have proudly refused to do just as we believe the Lord would lead us with regard to loving our neighbor as ourselves, they're not trusting in the Lord. They're tempting him. And that's a very great sin. Matthew 4, verses 6 through 7. This is the devil speaking to Christ in the wilderness, and saith unto him, if thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone. Jesus said unto him, it is written again, thou shalt not tempt thy God. One more thing. What about government then? Federal, city, state? What about these COVID-19 regulations and mandates we don't agree with? What ought we to do as Christians? Well, Peter and the other apostles said we ought to obey God rather than men. There was a situation where that applied. Does it apply with some of these mandates? Well, we better be careful. We better make sure that if there's some mandate, to refuse it is necessary to obey God. Not just because we think it's inequitable or possibly unconstitutional or any such thing. You can fight against something like that, but should you disobey? Well, if you have to obey God, but you had better be sure you have to. And to not do so would be sinful. I previously had spoken from this text, and I'll just read it. I have in mind right now something like mask mandates, where, in other words, you go to a store, you're supposed to put on a mask around others. I have heard Christians boast, I will never wear a mask. Well, never wear a mask. I see, because it would be a sin against God to wear a mask during an epidemic in a store, where there may be people that would like you to wear a mask besides. You may not agree with it, but that's what's required. If you think you have to obey God by not wearing a mask, you have to explain to me why it would be sin to wear one when it's required there as a temporary measure. But let's just read this, Matthew 17, 24 through 27. And when they were come to Capernaum, they that received tribute money came to Peter and said, doth not your master pay tribute? He saith, yes. And when he was coming to the house, Jesus prevented him, or preceded him with this. Jesus prevented him, saying, what thinkest thou, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute? Of their own children or of strangers? Peter saith unto him, of strangers. Jesus saith unto him, then are the children free, notwithstanding, lest we should offend them. Go thou to the sea and cast a hook and take up the fish that first cometh up. And when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. That take and give unto them for me and thee. Without going into it, The Lord pointed out that this tax was not an equitable tax. It was not necessarily a just tax, but rather than offend them. In other words, to put it simply, rather than be an impediment to the cause of Christ and the gospel unnecessarily, they just paid it. It wasn't a sin to just pay it. And the scriptures say, abstain from all appearance of evil. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 22. Many in the world, if they see a man or a woman they believe is a Christian, and they come striding through without a mask when they're required, to those in the world, they see a proud, arrogant person with no concern for the welfare of others. And you can say, I think that's a wrong understanding of, well, that's the one they have, I'm telling you. And so there's an appearance of evil. And likewise, this is an impediment to the cause and gospel of Christ. There's an offending, if you will. There is a perception there that is an impediment to the cause of Christ. We're to walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time, Colossians 4, the verse 5. But we're not going to go any further. I hope you understand what I just mentioned very briefly there about how we have to decide with this mandate, that mandate, how we have to decide what ought we to do. We search the scriptures. We search our hearts. We search our conscience. We say, am I sinning if I obey this? Am I sinning if I don't obey it? Am I being an impediment to the cause of Christ if I don't obey it when I could obey it without sinning against God? Christians have not been doing this, and we need to. And there's so much we could yet say concerning COVID-19, this crisis which has revealed the hearts of so many. Now, if the purpose of this COVID-19 plague is to humble a people, then we can expect more chastening from the Lord, either by this virus or other viruses, other epidemics, or by other means, or by all of the above, since so many hearts have been hardened rather than humbled. And tragically, that includes many Christian hearts. As for our duty to our neighbor in this crisis or any crisis, God forbid that we would act out of an attitude which is all too similar to that of Cain's. Genesis 4, verse 9. The Lord said unto Cain, where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? I will let another Puritan pastor comment on that. Well, I could preach on it and make application, but we'll just close with a comment by Matthew Henry. Maybe there's more people that respect him, and rightly so, than they would me. What does he say about that? Am I my brother's keeper? A charitable concern for our brethren as their keepers is a great duty, which is strictly required of us, but is generally neglected by us. Those who are unconcerned in the affairs of their brethren and take no care when they have the opportunity to prevent their hurt in their bodies, goods or good name, especially in their souls, do in effect speak Cain's language. God help us. God help us to never speak Cain's language and act in accordance to what we speak, as I regrettably have to say many, many Christians have done in the last 22 months. Amen.